Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest Anfield Index Under Pressure podcast. My name's Dan Kennett, and with me to go through the fantastic return to form of the Mighty Reds against Ajax, I'm joined by another full compliment. My namesake, our resident physio analyst and pressing data collection expert, it's Mr. Daniel Rhodes. Evening, Rhodesy.
Evening, mate. Nice to be discussing a win and a convincing performance.
Absolutely. Who doesn't love that?
Yes.
And then we have the Dynamic Sports Science duo. First of all, it's Mr. Friday Night Lights. He's only here for a short while because he has an engagement. He's coming directly from his ivory tower. It's Mr. Phil Barter.
How are we doing, boys? What a win that was, eh? What a win.
Yeah, what a win. Fun. Actual fun.
Actual fun watching the Reds.
Yeah, actual fun. And it's been a while. And to see somebody who likes fun, it's Mr. Simon Brundish.
Evening, boys. Nice win. Good week. Off for a busy week next one.
And that's just you working for England, I guess, right?
Yes, just boring stuff, you know.
Yeah. You know, you're going to be a sports scientist related to the national team. That's, you know, but yeah. Anyway. So we have a massive match to discuss, but we're going to keep simple. We are simply going to look at this match in the context of the Napoli game and the league form. And we're going to look at what changed. And we're going to do that in a various number of levels. But before we go into that, we're going to start, as we always do, with the LFC lineups and game plan. So, Si, how did we line up for this one after that? Was it a week off to stew on 8 days?
Yeah, it was 6 days, wasn't it? It was Wednesday to Tuesday.
Right.
It's a full training week with proper full plan and training in there. The big three big changes, Matip, Thiago and Jota, that's a hell of a triumvirate to bring into the team.
Isn't it?
Oh, Jesus. And with different qualities too. So you've got the power, speed and like punchy long range passing of Gomez into the silky, I don't know, a front foot genius of
carrier
quality, yeah, of Matip. So Matip is our biggest ball carrier and the player that creates the most progressive meters per touch in the team. So that's quite a big change of how we can play out. And then added to that, you have the greatest player ever to play for Liverpool, Thiago. And you've got the running and killer instinct and the insane pressing of Jota coming in for Bobby, who maybe we just see moments of for Bobby. I don't know. He seemed to be good in the massive 9-0 win, but he's not been at his best for a while now. So it was great to have those three back. And the rest of the team stayed as it is. I think there was some conversation around Elliot playing, but you kind of got the security blanket of Fab and Thiago back there. So it was kind of good. Did you think Darwin should play? I don't know. I think that was the only other discussion, wasn't it?
No way. No way.
No, I mean, I thought, I said on the pre-season preview, I thought it was going to, you know, barring injury, it would have been this front three would have started the season against Fulham, no question. I think Darwin has to be integrated into the team. So, but I love Jota. You know me. When the day we signed him, I was more excited on the doing the transfer pod for him than I was for Thiago. Because there you go. That's just me being weird. Yeah. Bart. So talk to me about Ajax.
So Ajax only made one change. They typically play a 4-3-3. They have not lost a game all season apart from the other night against us. They have fairly simple and, you know, well-known principles: play out from the back, you know, play three thirds. But I think they had a slight tweak. They changed their midfield setup to a 2-1 rather than a 3. I'm not even going to pronounce who they played at the weekend, but at the weekend they played a flat three with Claverson in the six, and not the sixth position, the number six, sorry. They dropped him out and put Burgos in the 10 role, which is number 23 for those keeping up, and 4 and 8 ended up being the double pivot, which is a very similar move that Napoli did. So Napoli typically play with a three. Against us, they switched to a double pivot and played a 10. So as we sort of spoke about teams working out or trying to copy principles that have worked well against us, they seemingly decided, right, we'll have a 4, have 2 in front, and then have a 10 and 3 runners and see how that works. But rather than be as direct as Napoli did, they still fairly, as we'll come on to, try to get the keeper to play out. And only eventually did they play long into Tadic and Bergwijn on the wings. So, but it still wasn't their go-to tactic, whereas Napoli definitely changed that tactic.
Yeah. But you know, Ajax are Dutch. It's the philosophy of the club. They're never going to change that philosophy.
But I thought it was interesting that they definitely changed the midfield chain to play against us.
But that's
it. A marginal change. A couple of well-known players in that have come to the Prem and got back again. So, but there you go.
You said
4 and 8, Phil. Surely even you can pronounce Kenneth Taylor.
I can do Kenneth Taylor, yes. Yes, I can pronounce Kenneth Taylor.
And Alvarez.
Alvarez, there we go. I could do the other one. Yeah.
And just on Ajax, I think it's worth noting that there's three models that we typically look at from time to time, particularly when we're playing European games, about team rankings and club strength. And Ajax are, on Euroclub Index at the lowest, they're 17th best team in Europe, according to Euroclub Index. Mm-hmm. On 538, they are 7th highest, 7th best. And on Club ELO, they're also 7th. So, I mean, that's no mean feat.
They're a good side. Also, I know we're slightly ahead of the match summary, but the XG and XGA are almost the reverse of the Rangers game. Yeah. So the Rangers, they created 2.4 and conceded. And only let Rangers create 0.4, should we say, for us. It was all around. So, yeah, but they are on the rankings, they're a very good side. But as you've always pointed out, Darv, that's slightly inflated by the level of quality.
I got my doubts, particularly about the 538 ranking model and stuff. But you know, Club ELO is a lot harder to argue with, isn't it? Because you know, it's
true. But two out of three have got them 7th in Europe. You know, it's a hard one, isn't it? But I agree.
They've got some good results, haven't they, in the Champions League in recent seasons?
When they've come to the knockouts, I think they've, apart from the season they got to the final, I think they've folded a little bit. But, you know, yeah, they're a good side. They're not.
To be fair, they sold 7 first teamers, and they got 2 absolute kids in the team who looked good and played well. But we talked up about like our transition, whatever. We're in a stage of transition. They're in a stage of absolute transition.
Rebuild.
So they've changed 19 players in 2 years.
Yeah. And their sporting director and manager were absolutely fuming that they had to sell Anthony with such little time left to replace him with. But to be honest, they couldn't refuse, so they had to do it.
I don't think they minded, because it was basically 50% of their annual turnover was Anthony.
Yeah, yeah, I know, but I was going to say, it is their model as well, right? We talk about the principles, but their principles are also to buy low, sell high, right?
Sure.
That is also there. But I'm not saying that.
But this is the beginning of their cycle of their... This isn't a well-rehearsed team. Other than the Ajax way is how all of their kids play from 6.
Exactly.
All the way through. So their young kids coming through, but the new signings aren't well-versed and well-rehearsed.
No, I agree.
And they're replacing 7 first-teamers. So this is a proper team in transition. Yep. This is a team... I'd suggest, without trying to take too much icing off our cake, is that their instruction is to do the thing that we love playing against, and they aren't that rehearsed at doing that thing yet. So this might have been a really, really good opportunity for us to play against them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been able to verify the exact fixture, Rosie, but I don't know if we got posts on TTT at all, but wasn't this something like Ajax on like 37 games unbeaten away from home in a row until this one?
I wasn't aware of that. Surely not in the Champions League.
No, in all
competitions.
Wow, like some. How did they lose then in the Champions League? How did they go out? Did someone beat them at home?
Yeah, Benfica beat them in Amsterdam.
Oh, there you go. Well,
yeah, I think they drew in Lisbon, and I think
Lisbon won it.
Yeah. And then Darwin scored a header, knocked him out.
Of course, I do remember that game now, yeah.
But yeah, something ridiculous. It's a really, really high number. I'm really sorry, stats fans, that we haven't got the accurate stat on that one, but it is a massive, massive number anyway. But anyway, Ajax, that's enough about Ajax for now. Let's talk about those differences. And first of all, Si, we're going to start with the most basic one of all, effort. Because it's fair to say, we've given the lads a bit of stick on this podcast, and they've got a lot of stick in public, haven't they? But for some rather lackadaisical performances. But this was very much back to form, I think.
Yeah, I have been one of the trying to defend players and their honour and their integrity, and saying this seems like there are other psychological factors in rather than just effort, and maybe physiological factors in fatigue. I'm sure they're all tired. I'm sure it's worn them out, losing, having played so intensely for 5 years, putting up record league numbers and stuff and still losing to City. It must be devastating, and it must be hard to motivate yourselves. But in the last couple of games, as brilliant as the turnaround was, it kind of points to that being an effort thing, because something switched and all of a sudden their motivation came back in a very real, quantifiable sense of they now started running a lot more than they had been and a lot faster for longer. So... are we up? I think high speed running was up. I can't get the numbers up in my screen. It's not opening.
You know the PDF's not opening for you.
No.
Okay, so it was up over 400 on Napoli and 450 on the season, the Premier League season average.
Right, there you go. Yeah, so that's plenty. So that's quite a significant jump up on. Rather than just Napoli, just on the Premier League season.
43% more versus the season average in the Premier League.
Which is just absurd, isn't it? So, but it was very obvious visually watching that suddenly players started sprinting across the pitch. I think there was, to be fair, there were 17 more turnovers than in the Napoli game, so that helps the transition. There were more final third ball wins in both halves, which causes more transition, which causes more players to run at the same time. But without a shadow of a doubt, our lads were sprinting to the ball when we didn't have it and with the ball when we did. And the numbers are very, very obvious. Klopp's talked about the historically 120 kilometres a game being a reward. We were averaging 106 this season and we got 116 in this one, which is a huge jump up. But there is, underneath that level, the stuff that sports scientists actually care about is having 1,000 high-speed runs. So you try to get a player, depends on which unit you pitch, but the bigger runners, you're trying to get them above 120 high-speed runs a game. And so we clocked 1,300 in this game, and we were down under 1,000 for the season. So it's a big jump up, and that's the thing that shows intensity in how commentators speak about it, but that's how it manifests. And it forces opposition into making mistakes so we can win the ball back. And I'm not a big believer in like Klopp's 120 or 1,000 high-speed runs or 900 high-speed meters, sprint meters. I'm not a big believer in those targets, but what I do believe is for a specific set of tactics to work, there is a minimum threshold below which that tactic can't work.
Yeah.
And our specific tactics, the pressing, the counter-pressing, is much higher, a minimum threshold for it to work, than most other teams. And we've been significantly below it.
Yeah, you can't argue with that. And just to try and put it into layman's terms as well, so maybe people understand, when we used to have the distance figures all the time at the start of UP, say, you basically used to talk around 5K was half a player, 10K was one player, basically. So an extra 10K versus the Premier League season on the whole, it's like having an extra player on the pitch in terms of the distance covered. It's just nuts.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I actually think if for us, it's the opposite. It's us playing with 10 players, and right, suddenly we've got 11 again.
Right.
Because if we're out, we averaged two of the last five seasons, 116 and a half, 117, average. And this season we've been averaging 10K, less than that. You're basically taking out one of the wide forwards.
Yeah. Just crazy. Yeah, and then so there's two levels. We've got the high speed runs, which is more than 5.5 meters per second, and then we've got the sprints, which is more than 7 meters per second. And the sprints was up 27% against Napoli, and then the high speed runs was up 33% versus Napoli, which is just a week apart. It's night and day, isn't it?
And if just for context, for people that have been on a treadmill, that high speed run is anything above, I think it's 19 kilometers an hour on a treadmill, and sprinting is above pretty much 25 kilometers an hour, 25 and a half, I think it is. So, like, that's what that they are the objective metrics that are labeled as these thresholds.
Yeah,
which you said in the group, Gags has never done in his life. I can also say that I've never done it in my life either. So this is the levels that they're at. That's how fast they are. Most of the people listening to this will have never achieved that kind of speed.
What did you say HSR was, say, in kilometres an hour?
Is 19, I think it is.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Have I done 19 kilometres an hour?
Yeah. Even
Gags?
Well, at some point, he would have probably been chased, and he's run away at 19 kilometres an hour.
Maybe he was chasing after a girl. Anyway, that's enough nonsense. Right. One last thing, Si, and you tweeted about it after the match. The fastest speed recorded during Liverpool Ajax was?
Mo's, 33.9.
But when?
Oh, it was one specific moment in the game that everybody knows, where he sprinted the length of the pitch back from one of our busted corners to go and not tackle one of their diving Kudu, was it? Yeah, who just dived in front of, dived next to him, because as Mo got there, he blocked off what would have been a shot, so he went down instead. And then Mo just turned around and sprinted the opposite end to go for a. Basically, he was ready for a sweaty when Diogo broke the whole length of the pitch.
So he basically did 260 meter shuttle runs at like 33 kilometers an hour, Matt.
It was actually more than that, but yeah, wow. So he ran 87 meters back, and then he ran 104 meters. Up the other end, back to attack.
Amazing. Now, but the reason I asked you about this, because, you know, first of all, it was Salah, but again, these are the things that we were calling out as lacking against Napoli and some of the other performances this season, which is the intensity to track back with the opposition as they break. But, you know, and we saw that instance memorably from Mo, but there was also a lot of others as well. So it was, it's just maybe there's been some very honest conversations in the last week, in the dressing room and the senior players and stuff say?
Yeah, my last thing on this, because I don't want to ramble too long, we've been on it for an hour, is not only the effort to get the whole length back, which Mo actually did in the previous game, there was another incident of that, but in the game before, but it's that we were making fouls high up the pitch when we lost the ball. So if there was a moment where there weren't many in this because we got Thiago, so we didn't lose possession in high-risk moments, but in the transition from corners, we were sprinting to make the foul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we'll come on to it later, but Thiago nearly had 100% efficiency, and his only one was a foul to stop them countering on us quite late in the game.
Yeah, and I think there was quite a few, I noticed in the data, Rosie, quite a few of the fails this time were leading to free kicks, which is a better sign than just being bypassed.
It's perfect. It's exactly what you want. Don't let them break. Don't let them run past you like we were doing against Napoli.
City tactic, but it worked for them. So, you know.
Mm. Right. Okay. Now, the other thing we need to talk about into the theme is pressing. It was the intensity. So when we talked about the effort, let's talk about the intensity. Principally for us, this means the pressing. I'm going to come on to that in a second, Rosie. But Bart, the other thing that Si alluded to is the which enables the intensity is the compactness of the team. And as Pep said in his book, we like to play 18 to 20 meters front to back. If that's the goal, isn't it? And we were a lot more compact in this match, right?
Yeah, I think particularly if you look at the centre halves, I think it's been a lot of time, particularly second half when we're on top in the opposition half, which I think is always a good sign for us. It shows you that we're really compacting the space from front to back. That's an old school phrase, but yeah. And I think it enabled us to, just from the eye, and I'm glad the data will come and back that up, but the front seemed to be pressing more coordinated, but they were because we were so high up and compact, they had the security blanket behind because there wasn't such a big gap between the midfield and the front. So the whole system started to look and work like us. And that all comes from being further up the pitch and camped in their half. Yes, as I said at the beginning, Ajax allowed us to do that because they're playing out from the back, as we'll come with some of the targeting we did. But still, we took advantage of that. We some of the touch maps so that they're not as deep in their overall shapes as they were for Napoli, you know, particularly two centre-halves. Their touch shapes were pretty much in our 18-yard box, and the full length for the pitch kit takes into some anomalies. But the touch maps for this game, they were starting midway through the out half, which shows you that actually we've shifted up the pitch and we're compacting the space a lot better. I thought overall the spacing was a lot better. I mean, we'll come on to Thiago, I'm sure, as we go through it, but I just that hole that we chatted about a lot, that left half space in our defensive side just didn't exist for the majority of the game, which allows us to do the pressing further in front, because you're not worried about being negatively transitioned on.
No, and there was only a few occurrences of negative transition, wasn't it?
There was, but not many. And that's, we'll come on to that with their goal, but that is one of the instances Thiago goes and presses really high, and we just didn't cover the space in behind there, and they broke through. So yeah, but other than that, I think there was one other chance where there was a negative transition, and then the only other breakthrough was when Diaz tries to keep the ball in from a corner, as I said, they was fighting for it, but rather than let it go out, you fix it into their path and they break on us. So, but other than that, I thought we dealt with those really, really well, with either a foul or just really good space and shaping.
Brilliant. Now, Rhodesy.
You want to do the match summary first, Dan?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry, I forgot that. Yeah, let's do that match summary first.
It's just, I know we had the anomaly against Bournemouth, but we haven't had a decent match summary against a decent team, so be nice to do one. And I was thinking about this one. It's kind of like arguably as perfect a match summary as I want to see this season, because we created the chances, and I know we had only had one big chance. 24 shots to 3 is your outline numbers. 19 shots in the box to 3. 10 shots on target to 1, so obviously testing the keeper. And although it was one big chance, there were 5 chances above 17%, which if you gave me a game where the opposition had 3 shots less than 10% and we had 5 shots above 17%, I'd take that all day long. Now, we've only got info goals model for the individual shot values. But yeah, this was good, as Phil touched on earlier. 2.2 to 0.2 is the non-penalty XG. If you're not conceding anything and you're creating one big chance and 4 very good chances, then that's as good as you want. 2.9 to 0.7 non-shot XG. The models were a little bit different. Kayleigh was 1.9, up to Statsbomb at 2.4. So yeah, it's good. We're still at a minus big chance difference for the season, Dan. 2.25 we've created, 2.5 for the opposition. It's going to be skewed by that Napoli game for a while, but we have to get that back into the positive at some point. But it's just interesting that we've got nearly 3 times as many shots in the box as the opposition. And I know in the last
over the season,
and I know, wow, in the last pod we touched on 15.25 to 6.63, but we touched on teams who was just putting a lot of men in the box, and that's why we might be having a high volume of shots in the box and a high volume of touches in the box. I don't know if, Si, you've got the numbers for this game for the touches in the box, but I'd imagine it was high with 19 shots inside there. And yeah, we're at 20 shots to 9 for the season across the average, and we're nearly up to 1 non-penalty XG difference, which is where we want to be. But yeah, if we can keep teams under 0.5, which we did a lot last season, we did it a lot in the title season, that's how you keep runs. It's how you put runs of wins together. With all the stuff we've been talking about the running, then yeah, I would like to see more match summaries where we're conceding virtually nothing and creating a good portion of chances.
So what was the XG difference across the models? Was it 2?
2, yeah.
Nice. Now that's a dominant win.
It's a dominant win, and now their goal came from a 7% chance.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, if that happens, that happens. And then they also had another 8% chance in the second half to nearly go 2-1 up when Blind headed it past the far post. Yeah, but
yeah, I don't think that was a good chance at all. But you know, the header from there is difficult to score. You know, it's the reason why he's a long way out. The ball's got to carry a long way to get to that far post from there.
We've talked about hitting the target. 10 shots on target is going to win you most games if the opposition only has 1.
Yeah, yeah.
There were 51 touches in the box to
15. There we go. Okay. So we're just like 45. We've had more than 45 touches in the box for about 5 consecutive games now.
What were your other stats in the box? Stats on touches in the box, Si? There was a couple of good ones, I think, I seem to recall.
I don't know what you mean, sorry, dude.
Oh no, I'm sure you said there was one about centre backs, and there was another one about somebody else having touches in the
box. Oh yeah, our centre backs had, our back 4 had 27 touches in the box.
That must be a first.
Which in the Premier League would be the 9th best team.
So our defence then was the 9th best team in context.
That's mad. Yeah. That's mad. Is that someone else from set pieces though, right?
I mean, mostly from set pieces. The centre backs had 16 between them.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, like, we had loads of set pieces. We can't remember the exact number, but we had a good portion of them in there, and also on second phases as well. It wasn't just a phase over the bar. It was trying to develop player, which was coming back. It was good to see us actually doing stuff from set plays again, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And there was only 10. Let's do the set play stuff now while I got it. While we mention it, we had 10 corners, and there was only 3 corners that we didn't have a chance from.
There we go. Yeah.
Which is exactly so where we were last season.
That's what that was like last season.
And also on those, as Si pointed out last week, one of the things we're talking about, maybe effort and intensity, was that that when a set piece went not to plan last week, we weren't backing up or causing, you know what I mean? They were breaking us easy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This time round, it was only one. Only ever one out of 10 did they get out of our bit, if you like, out of our defence and break on us. So I think that's, again, another sign that things have changed somewhat.
Yes. Just on the corners then, quickly, to finish set plays generally. 10 shots from court, 10 set play shots in total in this game. 3 for Van Dijk, 3 for Matip, 1 for Bobby. 4 for Van Dijk, actually, and 1 for Diaz, and 1 for Jota. So last season, we talked about set plays all the time. In the Premier League, we averaged 5.7 per game. All comps this season, we are now at 6.4 per game. I remember last season was an all-time record for any team in the Premier League. And we've got 6 goals in 8 games, all from corners. So this is actually a season-on-season improvement at this point, which is remarkable because, you know, so we had the best ever last season and we've actually improved on that at this point. Bart's your favourite. 9 of the 10 were outswingers. 9 of the 10 corners we took were outswingers.
I know it's that. Exactly. And the winner as well was an outswinger.
Yeah.
Mid-zone. And,
And can I say, word out to Kostas Tsimikas, right? 5 chances created in this match, I think he had, but not all of them set plays. No. But he's got over 50% corner completion on the season. Obviously, it's a lowish number, and it might well come down, but that's just remarkable. I don't think I've ever seen a player get over 50% of it, complete 50% of his corners before.
What's the average done? About 20, 25?
25, if that, 27.
Yeah, toppy, but I mean... Yeah. You're right, sample size is going to affect it, obviously. But I think we've always said Kostas is a good player, right? He's just...
Very good.
He's just maybe not in it as much as he should do. And I think this game was I thought his delivery all night was really, really good. He put the ball into the right areas. And on the set plays, I thought it was brilliant. He put the ball exactly where the pattern was supposed to be. And it was just down to a size favourite phrase of 50p heads to put it on target or over the bar. You know?
50p heads.
But you can't, if the ball's right, then he's done his job, right?
So Kostas is 7 of 13 on the season now. And Trent isn't far behind. He's 44%. He's 11 of 25 on the season from corners, which is remarkable.
Yeah.
So the total XG from corners was, some from set plays, was 0.92. from 10 shots. So we one goal from 0.92 XG. There you go. But it was the winner. It was the 89th minute. So there you go. Right. But yeah, definitely one to watch, Bart. I mean, I didn't think we could possibly improve on last season's set piece performance, but it's remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, but then if you reflect back what we said, I know we joke about the 50p head comment, but the size right. You know, the quality of ball in there, is all they have to do is put that ball on target. And I know heading's hard, but if you're getting, so what's that, 10 in that game, yeah?
Mm.
10 into the right area, you know where the ball's going, and they're winning that, they're winning half, then, you know, laws of probability is just they should get more on target than they are doing. You know, yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's a thought, is it third?
It all depends. I think the key factor, isn't it, in headers, is whether it's challenged or unchallenged.
Yeah, but if you've got BVD and Matic, there's not many players that are going to challenge you.
No, plus you've got to add a layer to that, in that if Jota jumps for a header and he's being marked, that is from exactly the same spot. If Virgil at the same height has the same level of marking, It's not the same level of difficulty.
No. And Jota is also very good in the air.
Yeah, but I think Virgil is the best. He might be the best or top 5 in the whole world at getting to a header.
Yeah. Mm.
He's just not that good at actually directing the thing.
No. It's like this one in the, is it first half, the dive-in header? And the keeper nearly found, was it in the net? But I'm like, how's he not scored from there?
Either side of the keeper is gone.
Doesn't it? He's unchallenged. Do you know, but you see Vivi do that a lot of time. I think Si's right. It's just directing it. When defending, you just go up and you head the ball. He's got, obviously he puts it into an area, but when he's attacking, he's deliberately trying to put it into an area. And maybe it's just not
his strength. Your challenge, right? So the three of you, right? Your challenge is to find a player, any player, who consistently scores at a rate. BVD outperforms his XG, right? Okay.
Everybody outperforms their XG if their header is...
I'm just going to say, I want you to find somebody
from corners,
who,
yeah?
Who, no, anywhere. Who, on header, who significantly performs like one and a half times more than
the challenge should be who improves their XG2.
Okay.
Who adds more XG2 to their headers?
I like it. Let's do
okay,
it.
Okay, I like that. I like that.
Because we already established that Virgil is much better at getting to the header than anybody else.
But we can't get what Virgil's XG2 from headers is, can we?
Yeah.
Can we? We only get the keeper. The total for the match for the keeper, right? We don't get a breakdown.
If you get, I think one of the tables I sent to Rosie, it's got their XGO2, which is XG2, isn't it?
Yeah, on target. Yeah, XG on target. Yeah.
So it's got their.
Oh, FOTMOP.
FOTMOP has got their total XG2. So yeah. Virgil's was point was eight.
Is it my sheet?
Yeah.
I've got 3 years worth of data on it.
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
From where?
From FOTMOB.
So that's where I've got that from. That's just Ajax. You got FOTMOB there.
Oh, you've been scraping. You've been scraping for 3 years, have you?
I do it every week, yeah.
Okay. So which one, like, one? Do you want to read out what the XGO2 was for this one then, Bart?
For Virgil, it's 0.08. Matt, it was 0.07. Jota, 0.2. Mo, 0.49. Nunez 0.74 for his limited, which goes back to your not a narrative but a story with Darwin, isn't it? What he is doing, we need to find a way of harnessing that because he's got quite a level of shots per minute for Darwin. He's a lot and he's only on for a limited time and he's won his aerial duels for the game as well. But that's for another story.
So,
but yeah.
So are we saying here that Virg and Matic had 7 shots between them, but only 2 were on target. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Going to football.
Okay. That doesn't seem right. So I thought
they had 3 shots on target.
Okay.
From 7, they had 3 shots on target. They had 0.58 XG, and they turned that into 0.37 XG2, and 0.3 of that was Matip.
Okay.
Interesting.
So Virgil's 0.28 XG turned into 0.07 XG2.
Okay.
But he kept hitting the ball down.
It's going to be very difficult to do that in terms of comparison with other players because you're not going to be able to scrape that, are you? But okay. That's why I said on XG, you might be able to find other players who are significantly good at, way ahead of their XG in terms of...
Yeah.
It's good homework, Dan. It's good homework.
I like a homework task.
I would suggest that any centre-back that scores goals is going to be outperforming their XG. Or who's that Czech? Suchek. My God, he's going to bust
West
out.
Ham, yeah.
Yeah. And to the field, he will bust... Anybody that heads the ball a lot is going to outperform their XG because 2 goals from 30 shots is going to crush it. I've always thought that it's an unfair comparison to say that he gets much better chances and because he's brilliant at getting chances.
But you still think, bottom line is, you think Virgil should score more goals than he does?
I've always thought Virgil should get 15 goals a season.
And with 15!
and I don't know. I don't know if there's ever been a team that had better set piece delivery.
I was going to say delivery. I don't agree with 15, but I agree Virgil should get more goals in the season.
Like, I think 15. Every single game he misses a good chance.
Yeah, that's fair. It's just the headers always hard, aren't they? But I don't.
I'd say top level 10. Si, come on.
No, but that's my point. I don't.
He's never got anywhere near double figures, has he?
No, he hasn't, and that's the point.
That is Si's point, and I agree with him. Virgil should definitely score more headers.
Virgil is the best I've ever seen at getting to headers from a centre back.
Yes, right? that.
So he should, and he's playing in a team that has the best delivery I've ever seen from both sides. Usually there is one great set piece delivery, but he's got it from both sides. He should be breaking centre backs' goal scoring records.
I think it's a fair argument. We're going to have to find out that.
Thomas Suchek has got 8 goals from 6.1 XG from set plays on understat.
Oh, 6. What did you say? 8 goals from 6.1?
8 goals from 6.1 XG.
that F brief or what was that?
No,
that eight headers, Dan?
No, it's just a set play goal.
Okay.
So we need to.
I think it's a fair assumption that the near goals who check set piece goals are going to be headers. I think that's reasonable.
You could be tarnishing with a bad brush there, Dan.
No, because I had him in fantasy team a couple of years ago. I do remember him scoring a lot of goals, and he'd look at that. So.
If we're going to go away from the header thing, right? I just want to point out another significant factor in this that kind of links together the set piece thing, but also the intensity thing, right? We had 16 shots in this game from fewer than five passes. We had 13 all season so far. That this was back to Liverpool and playing against Ajax, who don't fancy this stuff. That the quick transition happened all the time. It was kind of fluffed a little bit by the second balls from corners. So we get a corner. There's the Virgil heads at the goalie, and then instantly Jota gets the rebound. That's one. Do you know what I mean? But there was a significant change, is what I'm saying.
The goals, the same as the one again. No, our goal in this game, the first one, is Ali to the front, isn't it? So
yeah. Repeated the first shot we had from more than five shots, more than five touches of possession, was in the 65th minute.
Yeah.
Wow.
So quick football. That's the thing that Liverpool are great at. We are great at making long possession and allowing teams to. Yeah, so get back to that high turnover.
Particularly for first goal, right? Set piece or a quick ball. Like, that's kind of used to be our thing. But I agree with you.
Before we come on to the pressing, Rosie, Virgil is 17 goals from 14.2 expected from set plays for us.
14.2.
Yeah,
so 17 Suchek, just a little bit less good as Suchek.
Yeah,
17.1.
It's going to take an argument to find any better, Dan. I'm siding kind of with Dan here. I think we're going to struggle to find higher, but we'll see.
Anyway, let's talk about the pressing, Rosie. You collected this one after last week's misery. Give us your overall thoughts about the whole collection.
Well, I could write a mini ebook about this and call it intensity, but I think we won't go down that road. The first half was just about as intense a pressing performance as I can remember collecting. Gags might have done better, but I remember telling you I'd given myself like 4 hours for the game, and after 3.5 hours, I'd just finished the first half because it was ridiculous. It was the complete opposite of what we discussed against Napoli. It wasn't constantly in groups, but it was constantly backing up. So they were waiting and waiting and waiting, and then Jota would go, and then the rest would back him up. So he would go and press the keeper, and the keeper would punt it, and then there were players backing up to win that second ball. Or they were waiting for their left-hand side of centre-half, and I'm going to do a filly and call him number three, but he's got a tough name. Bassett.
And Bassett, we're not going to call him
Uglum, I was calling him because Info Goal had him had his first name. But they were waiting for him to get the ball, because if you noticed, he had a decent right foot, but his left foot was shocking. Yeah. And we kept pressing it and waiting for him to get the ball and then press. And it just either punt it out or just give us the ball back.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing. So that looked like a target, and that looked like an intelligent trigger from Jota.
But what Bart was saying, Rosie, what enables the waves is the compactness.
Of course, exactly. It's so important because they haven't, because their whole philosophy is to pass it out from the back, pass it out through the phases, and they couldn't. Because they didn't have any time to, because we were quick enough to get to him. So instead of having a James Milner who can't get to the player, or Henderson or Robertson this season, sometimes Trent, the players were timing everything right. So they were working as a team. So it was a unit pressing. It wasn't just Jota going, right, I'm going to wait here and then press, and then hopefully someone's going to back me up. It seemed like everyone was on the same hymn sheet, which is exactly what you need to be. And if we've talked about it 100 times doing pressing under Klopp, and that's what we did in this game. We pinned them back. They tried to pass it out. We didn't let them. They kept trying to pass it, and sometimes we'd let them pass it. Mm-hmm. And then we'd wait for the moment when it got to one of their weak links, which is what Napoli did.
Alvarez was decent.
And waited for our weak link.
He did, yeah. Alvarez was decent on the ball, but he was still targeted a lot, wasn't he, Rosie?
Hugely.
Yeah. You thought you made an observation to me that it was one person who was it was dominant leading it, yeah.
Jota was leading the press.
Yeah, and I think it's just reflection on this is that he had 48 possession adjusted, which is the most by any player since the semi-final against Villarreal last year, Sadio Mane. So the most of any player this season. And it's the first start Jota's made, isn't it, Rosie? He's a big player for us, isn't he?
It is. And even in Gangs' games and the games I've collected this season, I can't remember saying, and Si kind of touched on this when he was talking about Firmino's form, I can't remember saying this season that we've had someone leading the press. You know what I mean? So someone being in charge, someone being that conductor, saying, don't go yet, boys, or we're going now. And then everyone backing him up. And it's absolutely vital.
You had some kind words for Mo Salah and Luis Diaz as well?
Well, this is what I'm saying. It's the front three. So they were holding off. But again, the first time this season and the first time I think I've ever collected where the front three were the top three in terms of volume and all of them had 90% efficiency and more.
Yeah.
They won the ball 21 times between them.
Yeah.
I mean, look at it. We'll show that we'll put the shot map on and we'll put the press map on. But look at how often we press their keeper.
He must 19 times out, we pressed their keeper.
He must have been having nightmares about that press after the game because I think he turned it over 11, 12 times.
Yeah.
And Ajax, and it does touch on again what Si says about opportunity. They gave us the opportunity to do this because they were trying to pass it out from the back all the time.
Yeah.
But so were Napoli. And that's the difference. Napoli just knocked it around us, whereas...
Because we weren't compact and we weren't...
Yeah, whereas we didn't have any intensity. Ajax no room to breathe.
Yeah.
And the sprint numbers, the high-speed run numbers, the total distance numbers, the pressing numbers, everything backs up that. We were doing it. It was as diametrically opposite as a pressing performance could be. To that Napoli game.
Final one on what you said about the backing up and playing in waves. Obviously, if Gags was here, Gags would talk about the importance of the foundation, which was Fabinho and Thiago keeping the back door shut and allowing the press to happen. But the third midfielder, Harvey Elliott, Rosie. He's quite an interesting cog in the wheel in the gegenpressing sense, isn't he?
So he's what we're talking about with the compactness. So Jota was very aggressive in his press. Diaz was. Salah was not only aggressive in his press in the final third, but was also, and we'll come on to him, but he was also backing up Trent whenever they got forward on that right hand side, which is what they did. But Elliot was, I'm going to back you up, lads. I'll be there. I'll be there in that space. If someone comes out, if I need to be there next to you, Salah, I'll be there. If I need to be there next to you, Jota, I'll be there. But nothing aggressive. It wasn't winning possession much. It was just efficient. He wasn't letting anyone past him.
But this is what we always talk about chains, right? We always talk about chains, don't we, Rosie? And he was 100% efficiency, right? And then 85% of his presses were in, as part of a chain.
Which is exactly what we're saying about compactness and backing up.
So even though he wasn't winning the ball himself, there would often be, he would be the second or third press in a chain, say a four, which did result in something proactive.
Yeah. And that's how it always worked when we had... So Naby does that, on the left, or Henderson at his best was doing that.
Yeah.
And that's what you need from your right eight. You want them to back. If your front three are going to commit to pressing them in the final third, if they give you the opportunity, you need that right-hand eight and that left-hand eight and Fabinho then on the second phase, if they're going long, to back up the team. And if there's big gaps or if there's a weak link, then they're going to get around you and going to create huge chances because of the open space that we're leaving. But when you've got Elliot doing it on this side, and then you've got Thiago, was like, honestly, Dan, both the eights in this game, I think, basically had 100% efficiency. because Thiago's only fail was stopping them on a counter-attack, and I think it was the 84th minute, by giving away a clear foul.
Yeah.
Which is also what you want.
The front six all had between 26 and 33 presses, which is pretty remarkable. Yeah. Just before we move on to the individuals in terms of the ones who made the difference, the whole match was in the red zone, Rhodesy. The Papa chart, it was in a long time since we've seen that.
Yeah.
Pressing chain was aggressive, it was good, and it was well connected, particularly in the right back zone as well as the attacking third. And Jota did reach the mythical benchmark of 2 minutes per press. The elite of the elite. There's not many players getting to that. And just as a context for that, Harvey had every 2.5 minutes. So there's a lot to like from Harvey in terms of that learning the system, learning the Klopp system, learning gegenpressing. I think there's other things that we need to talk about with Harvey, but I don't think it's not possible to fault his.
Wasn't the question in this game. And yeah. I think what we needed from both of the eights was to back up the front three. And he did exactly what he did. I don't know if there's any Pink Floyd fans listening, but we've got, if you look at the pressing heat map, it's just a wall. Yeah. It's a wall in the middle of their half.
And it's changed.
Pressing chains is a whole wall where they can't get past us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very old fashioned Liverpool pressing viz, isn't it? Yeah. Bart, Si, anything you want to add on the pressing before we go on to the rest of this pod?
I think it just, for me, I was looking at the pass networks, you know, I do for the games, and I've done one up to the first subs going off, and actually with the EPV values, and what's things that strike me from that is Elliot's a bit narrower this week, they are more of a midfield three on the pass network than they have been in other games. And it's still wider, but it's more of an narrower shape up to the first subs, that is. What the two here that Rhodes is showing on screen is a two halves split by half. And even first half, Elliot's a lot narrower than he was against Napoli. And the other pleasing thing for me to see our play going back developing is that the darkest redder are our fullbacks. And the one I've got on my screen is up to the first subs, and that gets even redder as we look to when we first make the changes, which again suggests we've gone back to a little bit our fullbacks being the fulcrum of developing our play rather than relying on other individuals in the middle, which for me suggests a little bit of a tweak here and there. And also Jota's position on all of the pass maps is higher. It's not as deep. And I think that supports what Rhodes is saying in terms of backing up. The midfield three are narrower in this game, which allows them to get the pressing done, which then supports the front. And it allows the two out, you know, the attacking outlets, if you want, Diaz and Salah to get on the ball. And Salah's position in this game as all average is narrower as well.
Yeah, I mean, the front three all within the width of the 18-yard box.
All within the edge, which I think is the first time this season on a pass.
That's what we
want to see. And then you want to see the two fullbacks, the widest, which is typically how we do that. And Elliot, for me, you could still go in a bit, but it's better. Firmino, when he comes on, it plays deeper. But I mean, I think that's where it is. And Nunes, for me, as we'll come on to, I think it's a long-term project. He's still not making a lot of connections with the players. And I know he only had, 20-odd minutes, 28 minutes in this game, whatever it was.
Yeah.
That's a good chunk of time. Bearing in mind, to get a line on this map, you've got to have 4-plus with a player. It's still... he's not making the connections, but maybe that's some of the learning to where it is and staying in the width of the 18-yard box rather than going out wide. But yeah, I just thought there was some elements there of showing that Elliot was narrower in this game, which allowed the fullbacks a bit more space, which allowed Salah to come in, and I think that all helped with the system of our pressing.
So, Si, anything you want to add on pressing specifically?
Nope, you did the good stuff.
Because quick one on Trent and Mo, do you think they went back to both of those players went a little bit more back to basics rather than some of the funky stuff maybe that we've seen so far this season?
No, I think Trent was still in the centre forward position way too much for my liking. Mo was still a little too outside the game than I'd like to see, but. We can easily get dazzled because we played better as a team and our Ajax were worse. And the intent changed. Absolutely. Trent ran harder than he has.
Yeah.
Given that how hard he ran in the last game, which really wasn't. If I went upstairs to get a drink and came back down again, I would have run harder in this this evening than he did in that game. So it was better. It was just better on intent. I don't know if Trent actually was quite as good as some would believe, but like, he's Trent. If he's getting some praise instead of giving all the stick, sign me up for that. Mo scored, so people are on that.
It got on the end of a long foo ball, didn't he, Si?
Yeah, that Van Dijk ball. I can't remember what it was, but it was
Van Dijk ball.
Yeah. Sorry, did you notice that? I thought Kostas was taking up that inverted position better than Robbo more often.
He was there. I think I'm not sure how much we changed systems at all. I just think the personnel suited the system a little bit better, and yeah, we got better players. We just got better players. Everything is going to be, if we played three at the back, which I wouldn't be averse to, we would look better because Thiago's playing. If we played two at the back, which is what we usually do, playing, we still look better, and definitely against Ajax. So I'm very happy that the outcome was what it was. I thought we were better. I think we were a little bit flattered because of how many set pieces we had.
My final point on the pressing, Dan, is there was 100% efficiency in groups.
Yeah.
Which is what
you've been banging on. Which is what you want, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, just tactically, on top of us being more compact, which we absolutely were more compact, they were not. So that we had four players pressing their three. So our efficiency should go up because they were taking way more chances than anybody else we will ever play against this season.
So it's good that you're sounding a note of caution here. I like that, because we can all get a bit carried away with saying, you know, back to basics and it's all good. But, you know, it's more like baby steps then in your mind than, you know, we're there.
No, I think it's back to steps. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay. Right. So let's talk about the three players who made a difference. We're going to go one by one. Should we start with Thiago then? Because you just mentioned him a lot just in that last segment. How much of the improvement can be attributed simply to, this is what we, an extension of what we asked against Napoli, of removing James Milner and adding Thiago Alcantara? Sorry.
Or just removing that James Milner from this team and replacing him with anybody not called Nat Phillips is going to be better. But
you can't say that to Dan.
But right,
I don't know. I think that would have done better.
Just with a couple of numbers, right? In this, just think about the how
possession control.
Possession control. Milner's was almost -7 in 43 minutes, and Thiago's was, guess what? 7. So that's a positive swing of 14 possessions. He is twice as good. 14 possessions difference that you have to worry about the transition from.
Yeah.
Lots of progressive numbers, but simply removing fear is what Thiago does.
It was like the last thing I was clinging on to at the end of the last pod. I don't know if the listeners were the same, but it was just like we were trying to figure out if replacing the weakest link with arguably one of the strongest links would make such a big difference. But that possession control stat there is just such an indicator of how important someone can be when they can come in and give you the thing that we've not had all season, which is control. That's possession control as well as... It's just so vital. He's just so amazing on the ball.
Is it the possession control side, one of the key enablers for the compactness then?
Because
there's less basketball.
Yeah, there's less stress. So there is less risk. There is less chasing. There is more pressing. There is less recovering. There is more possession. There is better quality of everything goes on around because you're not playing with your hair on fire. The on top of the 14 possession swing, the Thiago had 7.9 meters progressive meters per touch, bear in mind we were playing in their half, 7.9 progressive meters per touch compared to Milner, who was playing a more attacking role even. His was 3.9. So it's improving 4 meters per touch. And Thiago had the most touches on the pitch of for his time.
So just to, again, just to elaborate what I was saying, so work this through. So the team has better control. The team isn't in transition as much. And therefore, when we do lose possession through a pass or a tackle, opposition tackle, so we are in a position to gegenpress.
Exactly that. We have structure.
Yeah. Top gegenpresser, by the way, this match, Rosie, was Harvey Elliott, 5, within 2 seconds of losing the ball. So I think he's another sign that Harvey's well suited to that particular side of things.
And we need everyone around him to help him and enable him to put that level of performance in off the ball, because as we've seen, he's been a bit of a headless chicken at times pressing. Because where do you go when you, as was touched on by Phil, I'm sorry, in the last part, he was drifting everywhere, he was going everywhere, and then leaving gaps against Napoli, and either because he thinks he has to cover Milner or he thinks he has to cover Trent, or
yeah, who knows,
not quite sure, yeah, and then. Yeah. So it's all those things, and he was the opposite.
And that's Rosie. That's what I think Thiago does here, isn't he? He does operate at times almost like a double pivot with Fab, which allows Harvey to go and do. It doesn't matter if he goes and does that because you've got the two behind him mopping things up, keeping the ball, keeping ticking it over, keeping the control. So, and also when he wins it, there's a player nearby. He knows where that player is to give it to. You know, if you win it high on the left, you turn around, there's Thiago there, give the ball to him.
If the last few games,
he's not there.
If you look at the average pressing positions, Thiago and Fab, when they play this system, they're nearly always side by side. But yeah,
exactly. And it's the same as the pass networks. They're almost up. So just to add to a little bit, the progressive passes, Thiago had double the amount of Milner in the last game from last game between the two games. So I think it's like 6 and 12.
Yeah. And they had nine possession wins direct from pressing between them. All central, pretty much, you know, either side of the centre circle, basically.
Is that also, for me, the progressive passes highlights Thiago's technique there? We're playing higher up, we're more compact. He still finds the ability to make a progressive pass.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a spread out game, that might be slightly easier to make a progressive pass, right? But we're in their half, compact, and he still threads the ball for the eye of the needle. Twice the amount as Milner did in the last game in the same position.
Yeah.
So that quality on the ball, and also the discipline. So, he made one error, I think, where he went too high and they broke and scored, right? Other than that, he was positionally spot on for the rest of the game. I'm here next to my buddy Fab. I'm going to do here. I'm going to make sure they don't break on us. And he still controlled the game from there. I thought it was an absolutely superb performance.
I mean, if you look at the progressive numbers, on the progressive passing, on the meters side, there's some big numbers there from Trent, Thiago, Van Dijk, all over 450. That's quite unusual, right?
Yeah. It's good. It's better for them for sure. I just think.
Love him, though. Basically, you don't. You, that's what you want to say. You love Thiago. I love him.
Yeah, exactly. He is probably my top. He's a top five people on earth in my brain.
And you've got children and a wife.
Is this after PE teacher of the year? Yeah, she's number one.
So it's your wife, your children, Salah, and then Thiago.
I think Thiago's overtaken Salah at this point.
Where does Klopp come?
Oh, Klopp's like ninth.
It's not a bad list, though, to be fair.
I've worked with too many managers to love managers.
That's fair.
That's fair.
Right. Anything else we want to discuss on Thiago before we move on to Joel Matip? But I'll let you talk about Joel and what you think he brings the team, particularly over Joe Gomez in a direct like-for-like comparison.
So defensively, he obviously wins more aerial duels than Joe. He had 188% in this game and Virgil at 89, whereas the last game, I think Joe was around 50, 60, I can't remember the exact figure, but he's going to win
it's
more
about
there.
Career, it's about his career average, is about 60.
Yeah, 60%. So Joel's higher on that. As Si touched on in the intro, whereas Joe does the punch ball into the front, Joel will take on a dribble, which can look a bit gangly, but he's totally under control and he knows exactly what he's doing, and still no one goes to tackle him. So he carries that ball into their half, or further into their half if we're already camped on a halfway line, with committing players, and then plays the pass off with a simple ball off to put us on the attack. He's not slow over, you know, he's not quick. He's not as quick as Joe, but he covers ground. He works well in one-to-one defending, so allows us to defend big spaces. Mm. Not saying Joe doesn't, but as a combination,
he's not slow, is he? He's not rapid.
But I think it's one of those that once you get up to the speed, he's good at that speed, but he's not quick. No,
I think he's one of those defenders now. He's reached that age where officially where the first 5 yards are in the head. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's extremely experienced. He knows what he's doing. And equally, I'm not seeing him physically bullied for it. Do you know what I mean? Whereas Joe in the last game got shrugged off the ball. I know he was having a bad game, got himself in a bit of a spiral. But Joel doesn't have that. He sort of just calmly goes about his business. Him and Virgil seem to be a great pair. I mean, Joe and Virgil were a good pair, but Joel and Virgil seem taking it up another level. And I also feel, when we're defending our box, we've got another tall player in there, you know, so there's not any weakness, should we say, in our box for them to target.
It's one of the things that we talked about with Van Dijk in recent times, is that the opposition has started to want to go at him, which is unthinkable. But when was the last time the opposition decided to go at Joel Matip?
They don't. And
exactly.
It's a good thing to have him in the team for, you know. And then the opposition way, he's also very good. I know we talk about maybe we should look at his ability on the ball as well, the chances he gets, but he does get himself in good positions to get the headers and on the first or second phase in the opposition box. So again, we go back from having two of our centre halves attacking the ball in a set of play, and not another player. So when Joe plays, Joe's back covering. Yeah, he's not in the box, which, when Joel's in the box, we then have different players covering. So I think it changes the dynamic. I think on the output, the dribbling ability can't be underrated, because it takes players.
So let's talk about the tactical dimensions there. They bring in side as well at this point. As well. So a defender carrying a ball into midfield looks nice, but why is it? Why is that so important tactically? Bart, do you want to have a quick word on this before you drop off?
Why is that important?
Yeah, tactically.
Because generally you're coming into the space and you're coming into an area where players are marked. So if a player has to go and press Matip or challenge Matip, they're leaving an attacker free. Yeah. Or someone has to then go to that attacker, which creates a space somewhere else in the chain.
Yeah.
And if you've got quality on the ball like Joel has, they pick the right pass, we can then exploit that space. So that, you know, we talk about systems changing and becoming unbalanced. So by Joel coming into that space, potentially creates an unbalance in their defensive setup, because they have to either go to him, which then means they have to quickly shuffle around who's marking who in their setup. So that creates an unbalance, or they let him go and it's a complete variable they don't control, and he plays a ball. If you're good on the ball and you play an unpressured pass, it's normally of high quality. We saw that against Leeds last season, dribbled all the way to the edge of box, played in Mo. But that's because no one went to him. So it gives you two done. The best thing you want is someone to come to challenge Joel when he's in their half, because it then frees up somebody else. And Joel's quickness of pass means we should be able to create an opportunity from that, because the ball should beat the player, get into the player, and then we play a quick 1-2s and we normally create a chance from that. So that's what it is for me.
Did you know that last season Joel Matip had a dribble completion rate of 84%?
It doesn't surprise me, but
he's only one dribble every two matches. But that's something from
that's impact. Then if you look at the resulting what he creates from that, that's very, very good for a centre half. You know,
it is, isn't it? I always remember the Moussa Dembélé, the old Tottenham dudes. He was the king of it. He had like 3.5 dribbles a match from midfield, and he had like 75% completion rate, just taking out midfielders all over the place.
Oh yeah, but he had players hanging up from left, right, and centre as well. You know, he was so strong on the ball. Whereas Matip glides through it. But yeah, I think it changes the balance of the defensive setup for the opposition, which we then exploit from quick passing from that.
Just a little contrast to Virgil's heading stats. I just had a quick look. He's had 107 headers for Liverpool, 10 goals from 9.7 XG. He's also had 8 assists from 6.5 XA.
Is this Joel?
Yeah, this is Joel. So he is outperforming both metrics, but not in the same level as Van Dijk. So who's the biggest 50p head?
Anyway, we're praising Joel at this point. We're not going to criticize him at this point. We're praising Joel. Right. Thank you very much for that, Bart. We'll see you in the international break, no doubt. We'll be in touch.
No worries. Take it easy.
Si, do you want to pick up where Bart's left off? What's your thoughts on, if you want to elaborate on Joel, his value as a tactical piece? Because remember you saying that in the Champions League final, one of the games, you thought the biggest decision was, you know, Konate over Matip, but you weren't sure because of Joel's, just his ability to carry the ball to the opposition, right?
Yeah, it does things for our midfield. It commits players. People that listen know I love speed. So for me to go against a Gomez selection in favour of Matip, then that has to be a significant reason, right? And fundamentally, I believe that the more players we have in a team that can beat a player one-on-one, mm-hmm. the better positive outcome for our team. And the more players that can beat more than one player, that increases our opportunity to attack by a magnitude of probably about 10. If you can take two players out of the game, how much space you have then created? Playing Matip is the opposite of playing Nat Phillips. When you have Nat Phillips at the back, the whole team can back, the opposition can back off that one player and go and man mark everybody else on the pitch because they know he can't threaten you at all.
Yeah.
If Matip is playing, they have to go and put a blocker in his way. Otherwise, he's going to run the ball right down their throat he's going to run straight at the right heart zone.
Which game was it last season where he ran all the way up to the edge of the opposition box, played a 1-2 and scored? Was it Leeds?
I don't remember. I'm too old.
Yeah, I think it was.
I think it was, yeah. That makes sense as well, because they're terrible. Yeah. But yeah. But he almost did that multiple times. Absolutely, we have a girl in my team that does the exact same stuff, but she's 5'6".
Brilliant.
That's the thing. But it's not even just that he does that. It's that they know he does that, so they have to mark him, which also means that there are going to be moments where Virgil is a little bit less marked. Marked less often because you can't mark everybody. That's just not how it works. It's just bad numbers. So it allows us to move that quilt around
Rafa's blanket.
Rafa used to talk about. Yeah, Rafa's blanket. There you go. So at the back you have Gomez is great at punching the ball like 35 yards into the feet of one of the attackers.
Mm.
It's never behind the back line. The Matip is much better at playing a ball behind the back line and connecting with the back line by running through midfield and creating space for the 8 to run into and for Mo to drop into or for the 10 to drop into and spin off. And Gomez doesn't do that. Gomez is much more likely to play a hard, direct, really accurate pass into one of those lads. So that probably works when you've got Bobby in the team. But it doesn't work when you've got Jota or Darwin in the team because they're not going to hold the ball and create a chance from that anyway. Most of the time, they're not going to allow that play to build.
Yeah.
So having Matip just it creates so many other things for the team to create from, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no question he had a very, very good game against Ajax. Roti, let's talk about that third player. A returning player, Diogo Jota. We've already talked about his pressing here, but it was a lot more to his performance in this game than just the pressing, wasn't there?
Well, it was. We haven't even discussed any of the goals, but he was it was in such an accurate. We call it a kick out from the keeper, but it was a pass. Looks like a pass, doesn't it? It looks like he's aiming for somebody.
Yeah.
And as soon as he sees that Diaz is going to go up for that duel, he pulls off into space, off Timber, I think it is, the defender, and controls it perfectly, and then drags the defender in and just dinks it around the corner for Salah. Perfect timing. And Salah's been after that kind of ball all season, really.
Yeah.
Where he's one-on-one with a keeper and he just knocks it in. And that's what he brings to the team. It's that kind of dervishness, that kind of, okay, I'm going to read this better. It's like peak Firmino. And now Firmino's not at that level. He can't do that. He doesn't seem to even read it. He doesn't seem to be that high. Mm. That one chance kind of encapsulated everything that he did. He also did the thing when he pulled off to the left-hand side. And again, Alisson plays an amazing pass. And then he dribbles into the box and cuts it across for Salah for like a 18% chance at the near post that just misses. So this is what he's offering. It's not just the off-ball contribution. It's not just the lead in the press.
Yeah.
And I think we did give him a bit of criticism last season, maybe about his lack of creativity, but in this game, he was on it. Creation, yeah. as well as, and then he had the shot. He had the dribble from that counter attack when Salah and Elliot sprinted back. And we're talking about this in the group with Si. I was watching it again afterwards, and although Elliot is sprinting, it's funny how fast Salah sprints past him to get into the position. But then Elliot feeds Jota, and Jota just runs like 60 meters. Should probably pass it to Mo, who's got there somehow, but he has the shot. And again, that's what he does. So he can carry the ball, he can feed passes, he can pull into space, lead the press. It's exactly what we've been missing all season.
Yeah, and I think so. I mean, you called him Gary Lineker very early on with his style of play. But it's fair to say, I think, that since that first, say, 6 to 9 months, when he was barely involved in build-up, and especially during his drought, he's become a lot more of a creative for others. I think it's his sixth assist since he last scored.
Yeah,
which is pretty remarkable, really. I mean, he will score again. I mean, he was pretty close in this match, to be fair.
He was. He had two cracking shots. But I think we can get caught up in the whole attack, like scorer or creator. He's just a good player. I think his instincts are to, I'm going to rip your throat out, and that's kind. It kind of drags everybody else along with him because
his attitude. I like his attitude. I think it's top class. Yeah.
Have you changed your opinion on him then, Si?
What do you mean?
You framed him as kind of a Lineker without the chance creation portion of his game. Is he kind of?
No, I was just trying to be more. I was just trying to be kind to Darth instead of arguing.
But is he becoming a more complete player while he's with us, or is he?
I'd hope he would improve at his age. I think he does some nice. I think he's much similar to Mane in that occasionally he'll pick the ball up a little bit deeper and make a pass that ends up as a goal. I don't think he's going to create a goal with a pass. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's usually he is making a pass and then bombing to go and get a goal just in case the pass comes back.
Yeah.
And Bobby absolutely does not do that thing.
Cannot do that.
I think he never did, but he definitely can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm really interested into what Darwin does because I've seen probably 5 hours of him play football ever, and that's probably a stretch as well. So I don't actually know what Darwin does. I've heard lots and lots of people say lots and lots of things about him. I like him. He looks rapid. He has the highest recorded speed in Europe this year. So he's is he really? Fast. Yeah.
Wow. When was that?
Oh, this year, not this season.
Oh, this year.
His highest recorded speed is 36.9K, so that's rapid.
So probably one of the times against us in the Champions League when he was running into wide open space.
Yes, possible. But he has a 35 again for us, I think, against Fulham.
Wow.
So he's very quick.
We just need to learn how to play it. All right, okay, let's do the Darwin stuff now quickly. still hasn't played three, even when you include the Charity Shield, he still hasn't played three full games for us. And his shot count is now up to 22. So 7.6 per game. I mean, this game, very much like the others, in build-up, he seems to be a bit of a pinball machine, say. But if you can, his movement off the shoulder of defenders down the channels is just a dream, isn't it?
It is. It's really good to have this chat, like following on directly from Jota. And when I said Jota is a killer, and he wants to score goals, but he just wants to kill whoever they're playing against, whoever he's playing against. So he'll get it, no matter what, he's getting in the box. I think that is the way his instincts roll. I think Darwin's instinct is much more, I'm going to get a shot. And that's a different instinct than what Jota has. That's different in that
you're going to... I'm going to get a shot and see what happens.
I'm going to shoot. His first thought is, how am I going to shoot? So sometimes he's going to shoot when he shouldn't.
Right.
You don't see that. You don't see Jota do that as much. From what I can see so far, he is more likely to be on the end of the chance.
Yeah.
I think Darwin probably has that.
I don't think Jota could do that Darwin shot, that volley against Everton. I don't think Jota could even attempt that shot.
I don't know. I see it in training all the time. That's the thing with football, stuff you see on the pitch, like unbelievable bits of skill, like you actually see that stuff happen all the time in training by players that aren't so like reputedly skillful.
Right.
So I was way less dazzled by that. It was lovely, and if that had gone in, then that tells me something different about him, that he has got some kind of evil genius in him that I'll take. But it didn't, and you know,
was saved.
Yeah, but it was down the middle; it wasn't the corner.
By Chester, down on volley.
That was beautiful, but you know, he's good. And I'm not trying to undermine Darwin. I literally have no judgment of him at all. I don't know how good he can or will be in any way. I've just seen traits so far. I like the things I see in him. I think he's this type of player. I might be completely wrong. I think I'm better about judging Diogo. I think UP judges Diogo more highly than most other Liverpool fan places or fans in general.
I agree.
Lucky to have it.
Of course we do.
So, just wrapping up, though, most important thing, Si, fingers crossed, or touch wood, following the international break, is that we will have the five forwards. And like this game, it was three start, two come on. And we're going to be able to do that through the insane spell after the international break up to the World Cup, right?
Yeah, and the insane spell, which is actually going to carry on now for the whole season. So because of the stupid two games we've had cancelled, that fills up the two blank weekend, two blank weekends that we potentially have from Cups.
The good news is,
if we do anything stupid,
is that Diaz and Salah aren't going to the World Cup, are they?
Right.
I would just counter a little bit of what we're saying about Nunes. I'm a little bit concerned by him ever leading a press.
He's a non-factor, right, Rosie? It's just like the other players. It's just the other lads, right?
He won't be able to. But I mean, we're talking about how vital Jota was in leading it, and how good, and how compact the team was behind him, and how all the stats have hugely increased on the Napoli game. As soon as Nunes came on, it was a bit of a factor in that we kind of lost that structure just because there was one guy doing his thing, whereas he wasn't doing a team thing. I don't know whether he can learn it. If he's got the pace, I don't know why he couldn't, but he needs to kind of learn that. And there was a couple of instances, particularly early on, where he wasn't getting close to the player, or wasn't reading the situation, and then they kind of played through us, which was one of the first times in the game. So that's something that's going to come, though. Like you say, he's only had three full games, so it's not a judgment. It's a watch this space.
There's a lot of work to do on both sides, isn't there? We need to learn to play with him. He needs to learn to play with us.
Yeah, but can I add a caveat to that? Right, we constantly talk up Klopp. Right. And probably rightly so. He's been amazing for us. We've had one of the greatest times in Liverpool history during his tenure. And the so many times we've had this incarnation of the system that he's created, whatever, this lad has to fit into that thing. But coaching is about getting the best out of everybody, getting the best out of that lad as well. So Klopp needs to also integrate both him into the system, but also the system needs to fit him in, because why are we buying a lad with totally different traits, physical traits and tactical traits, to do this one job? It can't have been to fit into Bobby's role.
No. But if you, I think it was pretty clear that the double sub took us to a 4-2-3-1 straight away, didn't it, Si?
Yeah. I hate Bobby's a 10. I've always hated Bobby's a 10. I don't believe he can play as a 10.
Anyway, but then that was the thing with them.
But yeah.
Anyway, and to be fair, Darwin basically almost set up slash scored the winner with that shot, cross-come shot. I think it was going in, wasn't it, Rosie? That shot from Nunes before the keeper.
Yeah, it deflected out for Colin,
didn't it? Yeah. But yeah, so that would have been, and that was before the winner, wasn't it? That was about 10 minutes to go, was it?
He also had a shot just inside the penalty spot that he dragged wide as well.
Oh, most
of it. It was like a little floated Fabinho, floated through ball, and then Moore plays a lovely little cushion pass, and he just dragged it wide, didn't he?
Just dragged it wide, about a foot wide, you know. Right, okay. Last question. We talked a lot about weak links last week, and just wanted to say, like, if we had to surmise, who would be the weak link in that performance against Ajax? Would it be Harvey or would it be Trent or any other candidates that you can think of? We talked about the importance of weak links last week. Rosie?
Yeah, I don't think we had a weak link in this game. Okay. I think more because of Ajax than us. I think they just played the complete... the contrast is unbelievable. They played completely into our hands and Napoli played... took advantage of our weak links.
Yeah, yeah.
Trent might have been one. Elliot might have been one. Tsimikas might have been one. If they'd have played it right, they didn't. Their tactics just set up perfectly for us.
So, Si, you want to see us do this performance against a team who trying to do like a Palace tactics or Napoli tactics, yeah?
Or any other type of tactics rather than the thing that they were basically target practice. For the thing that we have rehearsed for the last 7 years.
Right. Yeah.
You can say Trent or Harvey, I think their goal was the thing that they both didn't do very well. And it was the one example where Ajax did that thing that everybody else has been doing.
Yeah.
And it was ended up being a brilliant finish to go in.
Yeah.
But tactically what they did, the second at which that they paused and then their midfield runners diagonally ran away from Trent, left him with that. Shall I go and press? Shall I follow the runner? Shit, neither. That is the thing that Trent can never get past. He's instinctively not that player. So he only defends in a way he's been tactically taught to. He doesn't instinctively do the right thing defensively, which is what we talked about with Diaz and Mane, the difference between Diaz and Mane in the other end of the pitch.
Yeah.
The difference between Jota and Nunes.
Yeah, but Harvey is also the same guy. So Harvey, you can teach to press. He will tactically follow people and be in the right areas, but he doesn't know when. Neither of them know when danger is occurring.
Yeah, 100%.
Can I guess one caveat on that though? Say, wasn't the Ajax goal after a very long period of possession for them?
Yeah.
Now is that part of the process? But Ajax had it and they kept it and then.
Well, because we talk about playing long balls in behind Trent, but that's not the weakness. The weakness is isolating him against multiple players and then having players run in the inside slot. And if you can hold somebody in the corner in his peripheral vision outside him, unless the eight has gone to mark that player, he is constantly thinking, do I have to go to this guy or do I have to go to that guy? Oh, what do you do? Oh, it's too late. And Harvey should have gone with a runner again, the same as against Napoli, and he didn't. And it caused the overload, which ended up with Kudu getting the shot, which was an unbelievable finish.
It was top also bins,
the top cross. Bins. The cross megged Matic, which is unlucky.
Yeah. But like none of the actual defending of the defenders caused the goal. It was the structure that broke down just by two, not even bad decisions, just poor instincts.
Yeah.
Which is a very obvious, everybody knows about and can exploit.
Yeah.
And by playing the two of them together, there's nobody to counteract it.
My final question for the pod site on the Elliott role. My old-fashioned view, we always used to talk about this, so the system for years now, the system needs to facilitate Mo Salah. And then the best way to facilitate Mo Salah is Trent Alexander-Arnold. I'm struggling to see how the Elliott role does either of those things, allows either of those things to happen. It's almost like, for me, he's kind of getting in the way of both of them. I don't know if that's a bit mean, because he has been a good player over all the season. Am I being mean, or do I speak the truth?
I think probably a little bit. I want to see Trent play the ball earlier to Mo. That's what we all want to see, so right. We can create a moment of transition. It's really hard structurally. We're not playing teams that allow us to do this transition thing because we're not winning the ball where they're unstable. We're winning the ball where they've got two lads up front, we've got the ball back, and they already have 10 players back, so we have to try to build ponderously, slowly, and stretch them. And it's the quick ball from Trent to Mo. That's the thing that we all remember. That's the volume of which is the single most valuable pass to Liverpool in the last 6 years.
Right.
And because now he's not doing it, it's Harvey's fault. But I think it's a structural thing that we're not getting Mo high enough in the pitch to cause transition. But there's not enough transition going on. That's the bottom line. I think we might hit that pass earlier, but I think Harvey's role probably plays, and Harvey's position plays a role in how those three interact, and that Trent ends up going inside because they've made provisions for Harvey to be outside because he can do the things outside that Trent does.
Yeah.
So you're not losing that stuff theoretically. But I don't think Trent can do the things inside that Mo does. So why are you bloody doing it?
Yeah. Yeah. The tinkering. I just don't see the value in the tinkering.
Who wants to see Trent playing as the most attacking player? Who I don't want to see Trent chasing.
I want to see Mo Salah there. So,
exactly.
Yeah,
you get a Mo Salah chance, he scores.
Yeah, within reason, yes.
Yeah, within reason. Of course, anybody's going to miss. Everybody misses. Messi misses. Yeah. But you just need to get, it's an analytics-driven team, you need to get your most likely scorer the most chances.
Yeah, there's an old maxim, isn't there, in life? If it ain't broke, don't try and fix it. And I just don't know what, with Salah and Trent, I just don't know what I'm trying to fix. So with all this tinkering. But yeah, anyway, we shall see. I mean, but we've got a long time to wait for the next game. It's Brighton. And then it's a doubleheader. It's Brighton and Rangers. So there you go. Bart's side, there's your game against the low block team. Anyway, Rangers for sure.
Is that right? Well, Brighton are going to be as well because...
No, Brighton are just going to do deep possession and like they always do and stuff, aren't they? Pass. So that's going to be a different challenge and we shall see.
Yeah.
But we will be back with a doubleheader after the international break. Probably be about the 6th or 7th of October. But until then, up the Reds.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.